Let's start again. The topic for this lesson are two: inverse filtering and auralization. The two things can be seen one as the opposite of the other. It's like derivation and integration, okay? So if you first auralize, then you inverse filter, you come back where you started. So it is the same thing, may forward and backward. Let me start from inverse filtering, which sounds crazy because in theory you should go the other way first. But inverse filtering means when you have a sound system, for example a sound source like a CD player, an amplifier and a loudspeaker, to insert a filter before the amplifier, for example, but also after in some case. In any case, in any point of your system, of your chain of equipment, you somewhere insert a filter with the goal of correcting the behavior of the whole system. As we are dealing with linear and time invariant system, in the end is completely irrelevant to place the filter here or, for example, to filter the signal captured by the microphone. In principle, if the system is linear and time invariant, the filter can be placed everywhere with the same result. In practice is not so, because the system is not really linear and time invariant, the microphone also captures some noise, and if you filter the signal from the microphone, you are also filtering the noise. Instead, if you filter here, as shown, between the source and the loudspeaker, you are not filtering the noise, you are only filtering the music coming from the CD. Okay? So, this is the concept of a physical system with a filter. The filter for us is an FIR filter. We did already discuss 1 month ago that in the past a different type of filtering was employed called IIR filtering, but with modern machines, modern equipment, digital computers and so on, there is no point nowadays to employ the obsolete IIR technology. So any kind of filters can always be expressed as an FIR filter, as an impulse response, because in practice the impulse response of a filter is the filter itself, provided that you have a fast convolution device as this computer, which is a quite powerful convolution device. So your input signal pass through the filter, goes through the system, which is in this case the loudspeaker, the room, and the microphone, and with the signal you get at the end, if you did the inverse filter properly, is substantially identical to the original signal. So the filter compensates completely for the failure, for the problem of your system. Correct the system. So it's called an inverse filter because the goal is to invert the transfer function of the system, making it to be flat. Mathematically, if FDT is the FIR representation of your filter and H of T is the impulse response of your system, which again is the FIR representation of how your system behaves, the condition to meet is that the convolution of the system transfer function H convolved with your inverse filter F produce the delta function, the Dirac delta function. So in practice it will be only a pure delay. Of course there is some delay involved in this operation. The sound always takes time to be processed, so passing through the filter will cause a delay, and in the end what you will get is a delayed Dirac delta function, but the frequency response will become perfectly flat and there will be no reverb, no reflections, no echo, nothing which was happening in the real system. Because here there was not only direct sound, of course, there was also, there is the direct sound, but there are also reflection on the walls of the room, which arrive with delay. So in the end, the impulse response, which is here, is a very complex thing, like this, that, with the direct sound, reflection, and all the reverberant tail. Your inverse filter should be able to repack in time this impulse response, making the sound to become back dry as it was on the original recording of your music. This is an ideal inverse filter, a perfect inverse filter. Okay? Well, is it possible to design such a perfect inverse filter? The answer, it is in generally impossible. So it what is called mathematically a Bethe-Posed problem or a ill-conditioned problem, a problem which cannot be solved, is wrong, it is impossible. You can try, but you will never be able to get such a filter. So for many, many years it was said, okay, let's give up, it's impossible. Let me play with some stupid IIR for attempting at least to flatten in the spectrum, and let's give up with the reverb, the delays, and the echoes, and so on, because the task is impossible. But in more recent years, at the end of the 90s, 97, 98, so 15 years ago, some people in England at ISWR in Southampton did find the solution, which does not solve the mathematical problem because it is impossible to solve, but which sounds okay, which is good for us. We don't worry too much if the theory is wrong. A wrong theory produces a nice audible result. Okay, we are happy. Okay, so this is a solution which works for a linear system, providing an inverse filter which is not mathematically exact, but which is in practice very effective. Well, one problem is that this theory only works for linear systems. So we need to understand now what we mean for a linear. A linear system is a system which survives to the superposition. So if you play a signal A through the system and you play a different signal B, you get of course two different outputs from the system. Because you have played different input signal, you have got different output signal. The system is linear if the sum of the output signal when you play separately A and B is identical to the response of the signal of the system when you feed inside the system the sum of the original signal A and B. So the sum of the result is equal to the result of the sum. The sum of the output is the same as the output of the sum of the inputs. This is the concept of linearity. All other definitions, in my opinion, are wrong and misleading. So let's keep this one. A system is linear if, for any kind of input signal, whatever choice you make for the two input signals, A and B, you play them separately, you get two results. You play them together, you get a third result, which is exactly the sum of the two partial results you had obtained when playing only A or only B. This is the concept. So, a linear system can alter the frequency response. A linear system generally is not flat. It can have a terrible frequency response. It can perhaps cut certain frequency and boost some other. This is perfectly fine with this kind of definition. It's not a problem. If the same occurs the same way when you play A or when you play B, the system is still linear. We cannot tell that this kind of spectral alteration are distortion. For us, distortion is something which violates, invalidates this definition. If you alter the frequency response, but this definition is still working, then the system is linear. Also, if the frequency response is terrible. And the same is also in time domain. You can have reverb, delays, echoes, interference, the reflected sound which cancels with the direct sound. All this does not mean the system is not linear. The system can still be linear, and all these frequency domain effects or time domain effects are not indicator of non-linearity, are not distortion. For us, distortion is something which violates this superposition concept. So, what are the systems which are not linear? A compressor, a dynamic expander, a limiter, or a system which is clipping. Those are not linear systems, okay? Well, when the system is not linear, one very typical check of nonlinearity is to play a sinusoid, a pure tone with only one frequency. If the system is linear, the output contains only one frequency, the same as the input signal. You play a pure tone at 1 kHz, and the output will be a pure tone at 1 kHz. It can be boosted or reduced, it can be delayed, but it will still be a sinusoid at 1 kHz. When the system is not linear, in general, you get something different. You can have harmonics, you can have subharmonics, you can have wideband noise, you can have anything else from a pure sinusoid. But this is not exhaustive, because there are systems which still produce a pure sinusoid and nevertheless are not linear. For example, a compressor or an expander. If you play an input signal with constant amplitude, the compressor does not work, because it works only when the input amplitude is changing. If you test with a signal of constant amplitude, you don't evoke the nonlinearity of your system. So you must be very careful employing a sinusoidal tone for checking nonlinearity, because there are strongly not linear systems which still survive to the test with a pure tone. So we cannot use this as a definition of nonlinearity. The correct definition of nonlinearity is this one. The test with the pure tone, the so-called harmonic distortion, is not really a true test of distortion. Because if you get this, of course, if you have harmonics, you have distortion. But even without harmonics, you can still have distortion. Okay? Now, we have defined linearity, and now we suppose that it's true that our system is linear. If our system is linear, we can apply freely the convolution with the filter either to the output of the system or to the input. In this case, we pre-filter the input before feeding your system. And it works. Your filter convolved with H give you the Dirac delta. The linearity principle allow you to swap the order of this operation, so to bring this here or reverse it or do it as you like. So in the end you can substitute the Dirac delta to the convolution of H and H, and you get Y, which is just a delayed copy of X. Now, how can you search for the coefficient of your inverse filter? In the past, three methods have been proposed. Apart the original approach in which it was said it is impossible, so we give up. After that, some people attempted to create this kind of inverse filter. And the first one with some success was a Greek researcher, but he was working for his PhD again in Southampton in the 80s, 84, 85. I think he finished in the spring of 86. And he developed what is called the Morgopoulos method, and is based on a least square approximation in time domain. It's a very complex method from a mathematical point of view. I did never really understood the math behind this method. I attempted to use that with mixed result. If you attempt to invert the transfer function of a very simple system, like headphones placed inside the ear, so a system which does not have a lot of reverb, just some coloring of the sound, then the Morgopoulos inverse filter works. If you attempt to invert the response of a room, it's not going to work. And mathematically is also very heavy, takes a lot of time to compute these coefficients. A second method, which has been developed in the United States by Neely and Allen, again in the 80s, is based on a partial solution of the problem, which means, let's we flatten the spectrum, but don't care of the phase. Don't caring of the phase means don't caring of the reverb. So in the end, you get a perfect equalizer in frequency domain. If you look at the spectrum of your sound, it's flattened perfectly, but you still keep your natural room reverb and reflection, which for some kind of application is a quite good solution, because for listening music, we love to have some reverb. So you recorded music in a room which colors the sound in terms of amplitude at different frequency, and this is not nice, but we charge his good, nice reverberant tail, and we want to keep the reverb. We just want to equalize the spectrum for this kind of application, like in this room. In this room, the reverberation of the room is not disturbing. Is good, is the optimal reverberation time for a classroom. We measured that, and we have seen that the reverb of this room is not too much. It's just fine. So why would we like to remove the reverb? There is no point. Instead, if those loudspeakers are bad, they color the sound spectrally, and with an Neely and Allen inverse filter, we can flatten the response. And finally, we have the most modern method developed again in Southampton by Professor Nelfonson and Ole Kirkeby, who was again a PhD student, a doctorate student of Professor Nelson, and they developed a method which is similar to Neely and Allen because it works in frequency domain. So you get your impulse response of your system, go to frequency domain, and compute the flattening filter in frequency domain, but this also correct for the phase, so this also correct for reverb, delay, echoes, and so on. In some situation, you want to remove the reverb, and the Nelson and Kirkeby filter is the better one. Now I explain you the Kirkeby method, because is the one which I use more and which I love more. So first thing, you go in frequency domain. You measure your impulse response with any of the methods we have seen in the past. When you have measured the impulse response of your system, you go to frequency domain, so you get the complex spectrum. At this point, you compute your inverse filter with this kind of ratio, fraction. You make the conjugate of the complex number of this spectrum and divide for the product of the conjugate multiplied by the normal spectrum. This is more or less the squared modulus of your transfer function, but the trick is here, you add a small quantity called epsilon. This is the trick. And this is some my improvement of the method, because in the original method, epsilon was constant, And instead, in my modification of the Kierkegaard algorithm, epsilon is made variable with frequency. Final, you are still in frequency domain, you make an inverse Fourier transform, and you get your inverse filter in time domain. Okay? Epsilon is the regularization parameter, and the trick is to keep a small value of epsilon in the central frequency range and increase the regularization parameter so you give up with inverse filtering. We make a less accurate inverse filtering at very low frequency and at very high frequency. Why? Because your measurement was good in the central frequency range, but it is bad at very low frequency where your loudspeaker is not working, and at very high frequency because you are close to the Nyquist frequency, and when a digital system is operating close to the Nyquist frequency, here the anti-aliasing filter is operating, cutting away the signal, so you cannot attempt to invert the response here, because it will mean to invert the anti-aliasing filter, and if you invert the anti-aliasing filter, you get aliasing. So, in the end, you must give up above a certain frequency, because here is the domain of the anti-aliasing filter, and you don't have to attempt to invert it. Okay? With this trick, the system is working quite well. And here we have an example. We have a system which is just a car audio system, so the impulse response which is measured here, excuse me, pointer option, okay, this impulse response here okay, this one is the impulse response of a car, a Fiat Punto, a quite bad car. So, when the sound passes through your system, the sound is a piece of music. So, you have a piece of music. It passes through the car, and this is what you get. Which is not so nice. This is the signal captured by the microphone placed in the car. So your car sound system is not good. It's a crappy sound system. Cheap. Fiat Punto, you understand, okay, is the original sound system, is not an aftermarket sound system. So it's very cheap and quite bad. How can you make it sound better? You measure, this comes later. You measure your impulse response of your system. You compute the inverse filter. How strange is the inverse filter? Dwing, but it is still a sound, because a sound, a system, or a filter are all WAV files. This is important. There is no difference between a sound, a system, or a filter. In digital domain, they are still sequence of numbers at the sampling rate, so they are stored as WAV files. And when you have a WAV file, you can click and play. So it's very important that you learn not only to listen to sound, to music, but also to listen into system, like this, and to listen to inverse filter. This is not a very nice inverse filter. I made some better inverse filter. A good inverse filter is short. It makes pop. It doesn't make zwing when it, because it's ringing actually. Okay, so you get back with the problem with anti-aliasing filter. It's still a filter. It can still ring. So it's not good to have an inverse filter which rings so much, but we will come back to this later. Now, how the system works? We have our input signal, we have our system, and if we don't employ any filter, you have to scrap the signal. The original was better. More punchy, more bass. So we compute our inverse filter, inverting our measure transfer function. And we insert our inverse filter between the source and the playback system. So we have this filter here, and after passing through the filter, hear how crap is the sound. It's horrible. So one could say, how can this horrible filter creating this horrible sound can be used? This is the magic. This horrible thing here, when passed through your system, is predistorted in a way so that the distortion occurring here is compensated completely by the predistortion done by this filter. And this is what happened inside the car. It's quite similar to the original. I cannot hear really the difference with this system between the original and the filtered signal play back inside this Fiat Punto. So actually the sound system of the Fiat Punto has became a perfect hi-fi system transferring exactly to your ears the original recording which was on the CD. This is not so easy to do in every case, but it can be attempted in most cases, and generally speaking a proper filter placed here always improves any kind of reproduction system. So this is the future for digital system. System in which you first measure the transfer function of your system and then you compute an inverse filter for correcting it. And already, if you buy a good quality home theater system, not the cheap one, but a medium to high priced sound system costing 1,000 euros or more, the sound system is equipped with a microphone, and the setup instruction instruct you to place the microphone in the center of the listening area. The system makes his own measurement with MLS or with sine sweep or whatever they want. It measures the transfer function between every loudspeaker and this kind of microphone, and self-compute the equalizing filters so that your system adapts to the room. And if your room is boosting the bass, the sound system will reduce them and vice versa. So a good sound system is not playing the same everywhere, but it's self-measuring itself and self-filtering itself for sounding good in your room at your own. And this is a very important thing, because if not, the typical case in the past, you go to the shop selling high quality loudspeaker and professional sound system. You go there where they have a fantastic listening room with a lot of absorbing material, tube traps and diffuser panel on the walls and so on. You pay for the system which you like and you say, how, it's sounding really nice, okay, 5,000 euro, let's buy it. You bring it at home and at home it sounds crappy. That's quite typical. It was typical. Now, with modern digital sound system, it should not happen so much, because the system, when you go home, go through this procedure of measurement and computing and self-computation of inverse filter, so the system adapts to your room, and if it was sounding good in room A, it probably will also sound good in room B. Of course, this is not true if the room is completely crazy. If it is a completely specular room with curved surface, with focus the sound in one position, of course, then with electronics only, you cannot correct too big acoustical problems of your room. But if your room is just too rich of bass or too weak of bass, or have one disturbing reflection due to a mirror which your wife wanted to be there, of course, it's not a good idea to place a mirror in a room for music, but, you know, often the wife don't take care this, in their choice for the furniture of the room. So you get, you end up with a nasty reflection. One, the system can correct quite easily for one nasty reflection. So the system adapts itself to your room. Now we make very quickly the example here, how to measure an impulse response and how to invert it. We create our test signal, for example the sine sweep 48 between 200 and 24, 15 seconds, okay. This is our test signal. We did already explain this to you, so I go quickly on the measurement. I record from the microphone. Okay. Too loud. Sorry for a moment. First of all, the sweep was not, it was linear and it had to be exponential. Okay. Now the sweep is exponential. Second thing, I need to reduce the gain of the microphone. Okay. Let me make the recording again. Now divided in two. Okay. Bring back the gain. Okay. Papa, papa, papa. Now we convolve with the inverse filter for getting the impulse response. Not work. Ah, because I did not have anymore in the clipboard the inverse filter, I did have this one. Sorry. Edit, undo. Let me generate again the sweep for getting the inverse filter in the clipboard. Untitled. Yes. Generate. Okay. So we have the inverse filter in the clipboard. Go here. Convolve. Now it is the inverse filter. Okay. And this is our, there was some distortion, you see these small peaks here, but what matters to us is this impulse response here. We keep only this one. Okay. This is the impulse response of the loudspeaker of this computer. which of course are crafty. Well, it does not go much above 11 kHz, and also at low frequency, below 400 Hz it's falling down. So it's quite bandpassed, the sound from this loudspeaker. It's not really flat over the whole frequency range. Nevertheless, we can try to create an inverse filter for this. So we save it as loudspeaker IR, the impulse response of our loudspeaker. We now invoke the Kirchhoff inversion, telling it to create an inverse filter. Let me look in samples. This was 700 samples. We try to create an inverse filter which must be at least twice in length. This is a very important point. Generally speaking, the inverse filter must be longer than the impulse response you are wanting to invert. If your impulse response is less than 1 kilo point, you need to use a 2 kilo point inverse filter. This is the regularization parameter in the central frequency range, and for us the central frequency range goes from 400 Hz to 12 kHz, because we have seen that this kind of loudspeaker only works here. You should not try to invert your system where it is impossible. This loudspeaker works between 400 and 12 kHz, so we try to invert only in this range. Inside this range, we employ a small regularization parameter. Outside, we use a much larger regularization parameter, and we make some fade-in and fade-out at beginning and at the end, because we did cut our response. Okay, auto range. Number, no multiple here, that is just one IR. Okay, it should work. Let's see what happened. This is the inverse filter, but you already see that it's wrong. There is some sinusoid here ringing forever. We can retrieve it, it is now in the Windows clipboard. At which frequency is it? It is a quite low frequency. Is probably the resonance frequency of our system. It's this peak here. So we are attempting to flatten the system from 400 Hz above, but really it's not working because this peak is too loud. Also here there is a peak. So here we can stop at 10 kHz. But for controlling this peak here, the only way is to increase the regularization parameter. So let me try again. It's trial and error. Computing an inverse filter is not an exact science. It's like magic. And it's also a matter of being lucky. Now we are not lucky today. Too bad. But. We can get rid of this ringing applying a notch filter. We know the frequency of this ringing, and the frequency is exactly 650. Okay, 650. So FX filter, notch filter. Only one notch at 650, attenuation 50 decibel, let we exceed. It's not perfect. Yeah, but quite acceptable. Okay. Then we bring it to zero at the beginning and at the end. With this fade in and fade out, okay? And now we finally test if our inverse filter works. We have our loudspeaker, we convolve with the inverse filter, and see what we get. It's working quite well, because now the response of your system is close to a direct delta function, and the frequency response, apart this frequency here where something crazy is occurring, then it's working quite well, flattening your response inside the grid. Now we have understood what is the problem here. There is only one microphone, but we were playing between two loudspeakers. So at a certain frequency, the signal of one loudspeaker cancels the signal of the other. So the inverse filter attempts to correct this, boosting this the signal at that frequency, but of course it cannot do that, because there is always cancellation. You should compute separately one filter for each loudspeaker and equalize a stereo system like this one with two independent filters. Then it's going to work. If you cannot use the same filter for both loudspeakers, it's not going to work. So this is one of the things which you will do in January during the lab session. You will have to measure the sound system of your own computer. Every one of you will have a computer with loudspeaker and one microphone. You have to measure the transfer function of such loudspeaker, and then compute the inverse filter, and finally check if it really works, flattening the response of the system. Any question? Okay, let me stop again.